Welcome to the Today's Leader podcast. Building tomorrow's best leaders, today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul, I see you.
All right, finish off.
And it's my pleasure to welcome to the Today's Leader podcast, Building Tomorrow's Best Leaders Today. Please welcome Dr. Christopher Avery. How are you, Christopher?
I'm free, powerful, and at choice, Coach Curl. How are you?
What a great way to start an interview. That is awesome. Christopher, share a little bit of your story with our audience.
Well, it's going to go a long ways back. So here's my story. I started a good job after college, and I was going to build a sales territory in Southern California. And I started working, and I kept having these visions of my dad as my only role model, really. I don't know why he was my only role model for going to work for a living. But my visions were of him being outwardly very successful. He was a successful executive with a major corporation. But he came home from work every day tired and sore and frustrated and pissed off and had high blood pressure and lifelong diseases of stress that eventually took his life. And, you know, I kind of had this existential angst here in my early 20s of, what the heck am I doing? And I had a professor that you know, said, go take the graduate record exams to get into graduate school, even though I had no intention to do so.
Yeah.
And he said, and send them to me. And I did all of that. And it turns out that I had, you know, performed extremely well. And he called me up and he said, you're coming back here for a master's degree. We'll do it in 12 months. And then you can go to any PhD program in the world that you want to go to. And I said, I'm in. Because I'd never been a student before. I wasn't a good student in high school. I made good grades easily without studying. I had to learn to study in college, but I still wasn't a great student. But this, whatever I experienced trying to go to work for a living and kept thinking about, you know, the next 30 or 40 years of my existence turned me into a student. And so I went and studied organization science. And the number one problem in organization science that we're trying to solve for the last many decades is how do we both have highly profitable enterprises and have people who have a life at work, right? And that was really exciting to me. And while I was working on my dissertation, I spent 5 years working in a consulting firm. And so I built consulting skills. And when I finished my dissertation, I decided to go ahead and go back working in industry as an applied scientist instead of being a research scientist and a professor. And my first big job was trying to figure out how to teach shared responsibility to software project leaders trying to build teams. So I had an opportunity to help people learn how to build teams. I decided that the magic sauce that I wanted to use for that, that the essence of that was shared responsibility. So when people in different silos step up to a larger shared responsibility is when teams gel. Now, other people use other words like honesty or transparency or trust or safety or whatever. Yeah. But that was what I was doing at the time. And so I know it's kind of a long story, but I went to try and, you know, understand what is this stuff called personal responsibility and where does it come from? And is it baked in? Do people either have it or not? That's what my parents taught me. That's what, you know, they said, if you want something done, you better go find the responsible person and, and assign it to them. But as I worked with team building, I saw that people would go from being engaged to unengaged to back and engaged again. So I saw that responsibility was an emergent quality in all of us. And I found a little research program that was teasing out what I now call the responsibility process, which is a fascinating mental pattern about how we all process thoughts about taking or avoiding responsibility for our lives and situations in our lives. And that was it. I started using that model years ago, and I have become the worldwide innovator of that model.
Wow. And Christopher, you've written a book, The Responsibility Process, Unlocking Your Natural Ability to Live and Lead with Power. So
that's correct. Yeah.
So I'm a listener, I'm a leader listening to this podcast, and I've picked up a couple of key things that you've already spoken about, shared responsibility within teams. I also like the little story about your parents saying, go find someone responsible, because a lot of leaders would say, well, if you want something done right, I will do it myself, you know.
Yes.
So there's a little bit of a contradictory aspect here. So how can a leader embrace what it is that you've talked about with the responsibility process and become a better leader and create the team that they want, but also more broadly around the life that they desire?
So how can a leader embrace the responsibility process? The way a leader would embrace the responsibility process is to make a decision, make a commitment to take 100% ownership of their life and every aspect of it.
Yeah.
And then learn the responsibility process. So the responsibility process is a stack of six words, and it shows how we respond every time the smallest thing goes wrong, and how we get stuck thinking that there's nothing we can do, thinking that we're powerless, thinking that the problem is out there instead of in here. And if you really learn the research around the responsibility process, what you will learn is that all problems are in here.
Yeah.
There are no problems are out there, that a problem is defined in the mind. And our very technical psychology behind a problem is that it's an intersection of two thoughts.
Yeah.
And one thought is what we want, what we're trying to accomplish, what we're trying to do or get. And the other thought is the negative result that we're getting. Here's an example. I just want to enjoy a nice cup of coffee. Mm. And so I make the coffee in the kitchen, and I'm headed back to my office to enjoy the cup of coffee. And on the way, I stub my toe on something and trip. And now I've got coffee all down the front of me and on the floor.
Yep. Right?
So at that moment, what I want, enjoy a cup of coffee, and what I have, right, is a mess. Mm. That causes that conflict in our mind. It's two little conflicting thoughts. And that causes angst.
Yeah.
Anxiety, right?
Yeah.
Or pissed offness. So if some guys say, I don't have anxiety. Okay, well, pissed offness, frustration. And that anxiety then triggers the responsibility process in our mind. Mm. And our mind automatically goes to the bottom of the process, which is lay blame.
Mm.
And we can get stuck in that place for a second or a minute or an hour or a day or a week or a decade or a lifetime, or we can get off of it.
Yeah.
So every step in the responsibility process, and maybe we should go through those steps, every step in the process is just a mental state with its own simplistic cause-effect logic. And in blame, the cause-effect logic is that somebody's doing this to me and I'm powerless.
Yeah.
And until they change, I'm going to be unhappy. So so for the leader listening to this, I believe that leadership is responsibility, period.
Okay.
Right. And so the responsibility process is my leadership compass or GPS that helps me see when I'm stuck somewhere thinking that I'm powerless, thinking that the problem is out there, thinking that something out there has to change. And I can use the keys to responsibility, which are intention, awareness, and confront, which are all aspects of consciousness, in order to get myself unstuck and get myself to a resourceful mental state of responsibility. And in that place, I access my authenticity. I access my unique genius. I access my unique inspiration.
Yeah.
So in the mental state of responsibility is where we do our best problem solving. And in any other mental state, we're not solving a problem. We're just dealing with our anxiety about not having what we want.
Or pissed offedness, as you called it. So
pissed offedness.
Yeah, yeah. I had a vision of Homer Simpson going dull when you were talking about the drop coffee, because we all have those dull moments, and you've explained that quite well as to how we generally go into that moment when we have made that mistake or have made that blue, and explained the reason why. So I found that really quite compelling. So if people listening can identify with Homer Simpson, it's that dull moment that we all get. So now you mentioned that you were working with some software teams around shared responsibility, and I guess what we've seen what we see in software is collaboration, communication, and we often see people in different parts of the world. You know, just the other day I was speaking to a leader who had a team in Philippines, a team in the Ukraine, a team in UK, and a team in America. And so when you're looking at software teams, predominantly the work can be done just about anywhere in the world. So over the last couple of years, we've had this little thing called COVID, which has sort of changed some of our team behavior and our team habits, and not necessarily having the team within the four walls of a building has been something that many leaders initially found a bit of a novelty, but are now quite challenged by it, because it's not just a novelty anymore. It seems to be an ongoing part where we're looking at hybrid workplaces, allowing people to work at home. We've looked at the productivity analysis and said, well, you know, we're just as productive with people not being here. So so how can a leader, with remote teams especially, I guess, how can a leader utilize, and do you have any tips for leaders who are working with remote teams, how they can build what it is that they do without necessarily the blame game, which I'd imagine is probably more prevalent in remote teams than within office teams?
Possibly, because of the isolation and the separation. And by the way, the blame game, if you look at the responsibility process, and I recommend that you go to responsibility.com and navigate to the process and read about the process and download the poster. So blame is the takes the lowest computational effort in order to vent when something goes wrong. Blame and justify. So it is the number one coping mechanism in organizations. Managers blame people, and people blame managers. And when I work with leaders in an organization, even before signing the contract, I take blame away from them. I say, look, you know, if you want me, you want my material, and my material says stop blaming your people. It's your system, darn it. Right? And if there's a problem, then you get to own the whole system and figure out how the system must change. Because if you're going to pay me what you pay me to sit and listen to you blame about your employees, you know, I'm not going to have any fun, and I'm not going to do it for very long. So here's the tips. Again, back to take 100% responsibility for whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. So I define leadership as a consequence, as a side effect of someone signing up for something bigger than them. And that means they must attract help to get it done. So for a leader who's got remote teams or remote workforce, to me, you have two choices. you either tighten down the screws so that you try and control everything, right? Or you free everything up as much as possible. And the trade-off is that when you tighten down the screws as much as possible, you can't tighten down everything and something will break. Yeah. And usually what breaks is people's creativity and their willingness and their interest and their engagement.
Yeah.
But
all,
if you
all the leader. Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
But if you free things up for everybody as much as possible and trust them, then they tend to want to show up for you because you're coming from a place of inspiration, especially if you're doing, you know, if your purpose of your business or your company is important. After that, it's just a whole bunch of things that you want to do. So for me, the team building is straightforward. It's a set of of conversations. So the first conversation is, or the first step, there's a step zero, which is first take 100% responsibility for being on a great team.
Yeah.
So that's one of my strengths for the last many years is I've refused to work on committees, boards, anything that doesn't want to be a team. I just can't add as much value as possible in a committee or a board situation. But if that committee or board wants to be a team, then I can add a lot of value and bring much more value out of everybody else. So that's number one is take 100% responsibility for being on a great team. And that means look at yourself and assess whether you are actually a good collaborator or not. Are you a team player? Do you do what you say you'll do? Do you know how to make agreements and keep them? Yeah. Then the next step is to get clear about the larger task or purpose or why for the group. And I have a conversational tool there that says, host this question with your colleagues. And the question is, what must we do together that's bigger than any of us and requires all of us? And none of us can claim individual victory without it. Right. So that part is getting people aligned in the same direction. And you don't get alignment by assigning direction. You get alignment by conversation about what is it that we're doing together that's bigger than any one of our jobs.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And then my third step is actually to discover people's reasons, individual reasons for being there. And I call this surfacing motivation because in the history of teamwork, what concerns most people, especially higher performers, about teamwork is that other people will not match their commitment and that they're going to be dragging other people along. And so I discovered in building my team orientation process, I discovered very early to start a conversation about what's in it for you and what's in it for me beyond a paycheck. You know, to be on this team doing this thing bigger than just my job. And that's really interesting because what we really discover people's deeper inspiration and help them sign up at a higher level, even though this little technique doesn't ask them to sign up or sign in blood or sign the poster or state their commitment under oath, you know. And then the next conversation is all around ways of working. You know, you can call this operating agreements or ways of working. But yeah, how are we going to get things done? What tools are we going to use? What's going to be our cadence for meeting? What are our agreements around safety, security, communication, decision making? Who makes what decisions? What processes are we going to use? All of that kind of stuff.
So it's a series of conversations. I really like that concept. And once again, I'm thinking about leaders that listen to this podcast. I can see some lights being turned on. So I've worked in project teams, for example, where you sign up to the agreement of how we're all going to operate and work together. And then it's almost like the minute you walk out of the door, that agreement was just something we had to do to be seen to be working together. And then that true collaborative spirit just never seems to shine through. So That just makes so much sense. And this is all stepped out in the responsibility process in the book.
It's not actually stepped out as much in that book as in my earlier book called Teamwork as an Individual Skill.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. And once again, so many people don't see that and as teamwork as an individual skill. It's something that, and what I truly love is that first step of the journey. It's accepting 100% responsibility of being in a great team. And that just resonates with me so deeply, because that whole concept of personal responsibility, personal accountability. What sort of studies are going on in this area at the moment, Christopher, that you've sort of embraced or led?
So the responsibility process adventure has been one long phenomenological study that is not being done in the university. So you won't find traditional peer-reviewed articles on this. There's one dissertation that I sat on a dissertation committee for somebody around this. But the research was started by two folks who were both doing a lot of coaching. And they were familiar with the language that came out of Werner Erhard's EST programs in the 1960s. The language is above the line or below the line, or owning it or not owning it. And that group could be quite caustic at finger pointing and telling people, you're not owning it, you know. And what these two folks did, 1,000 miles apart, one in Texas and one in Fort Collins, Colorado, was they just started taking notes the way Virginia Satir or Carl Jung or Freud or others took notes as they worked with clients. They just started noting how people explained why they were stuck or why they couldn't have what they want. And every 6 months or a year, they'd get together and they'd compare notes. And it turns out they started building this chart, the responsibility process. And the first time they got together, there were three words on it: lay blame, justify, and responsibility. And by 2 years later, it had filled in to lay blame, justify, shame, quit, obligation, and responsibility. And then the research became, well, can we use this as a diagnostic and as a therapeutic tool while coaching to get people unstuck? So in other words, if somebody comes in and starts with blame, you know, everything that's wrong with my life is because of my wife or my mother or my boss, right?
Yeah.
Well, if I can build rapport with you, and then if I can kind of take blame away from you, and one way I might do that is very compassionately say, you know, how long do you want to be a victim of this person? Or do you notice how powerless that is? You know, or if I've taught them the responsibility process, I just point to the chart and say, can you see where you are? And so if I take blame away, then we predict that they will land on justify, which is a story or an excuse. You know, well, it's the conditions, it's COVID, it's the economy, right? It's the weather, I didn't have time. So then if we can take that away, then the next thing people do is they cast their eyes down and look guilty, and they say, wow, really, I screwed this up myself. What adult I am. So that's shame on the chart, lay blame on self. And that usually takes a little work to get people to understand that feeling guilty or ashamed of making a mistake or having a problem is not only a normal human dynamic, but it's also highly conditioned in our society, because at a very young age, people started saying to us, what's wrong with you? Why did you do that? And so if we can get people to stop beating themselves up for having a mistake, then the next thing that happens to them is that they realize they believe they're trapped. You know, they're trapped in their marriage or trapped in their job or trapped in the mortgage or taking care of their elderly parents or whatever it is. And that's the mental state of obligation, which is a burden. So that research now continues with my students and colleagues around the world who are teaching and practicing and using the responsibility process in their coaching. The other primary line of research that I'm involved in is how to get people to start a responsibility practice fast. It turns out that the number of people who hear about this and are really excited and titillated at first is large, but the number of people who actually do anything about it is tiny. So, go ahead.
I'd imagine you see that quite often, and you see that in just about every aspect of leadership. I've seen leaders come back from a day spent on a safety leadership program, and all of a sudden they're like the safety role model. They're walking around in their fluoros and they're having team catch-ups and, you know, stand-ups and whatnot about safety. And within, you know, a 48-hour process, all of a sudden it's gone, it's past the window. And interestingly, when you were talking about the above-the-line formula, and, you know, once again, I've been exposed to that in my corporate life, and there's some really good stuff in that if you understand how you can work with that within teams. But I'll quickly share a story of exposure I had with that with probably one of the worst leaders I've ever worked with. And he had been exposed to the above the line, and he was sharing it all with his team of regional managers. I was part of his team as a regional manager. And he shared the above the line, and he talked about that we're going to own it, we're going to accept accountability, we're going to be responsible, all of those things. And then he spent the next 2 hours in the meeting blaming, excusing him, and denying. And so from a role model aspect, it was really like, it was almost like, do as I say, not as I do. And it was just, it was pointless. From then on in, the above the line leadership aspect just did not work. So,
Yeah, of course not. And here's the fascinating thing is he didn't know he was doing that. Right? He was just dealing with his internal anxiety around not having, not accomplishing what he wanted to accomplish.
Falling
short of performance expectations, whatever.
So
he naturally fell below the line. And didn't even know it. And so that's the work to do here is to, the work is not to just sign up to now, you know, I listened to Coach Carl and Christopher Avery and now I'm going to be responsible. No, the work is to replace, is to look at every upset as an opportunity to learn. Right? So things go wrong every day, all day. And that means I practice responsibility every day, all day long. And practicing actually gives me freedom, choice, and power, right? So I'm not practicing obligation. I'm practicing the ability to respond to what went wrong and to turn it around or to let it go or to release it or to figure out what I want about it. So what I do is help people build responsibility practices. And that's when you become inspiring as a leader, especially when things go wrong in your organization, and things go wrong all the time. And, you know, you can ask the question, what do you have all of those emergency meetings about? Well, those emergency meetings are about problems. And if the responsibility process gets triggered in everybody's mind when there's a problem, then guess how people are showing up at those meetings? You know, they're ready to finger point and blame and justify and say there's nothing they can do. And
you can just see it. It's an evolution. It's daily practice, and it's being conscious about making that choice and removing ourselves from those Homer Simpson moments and really trying to shift the way potentially we think about it. Christopher, who's been, I guess, the inspiration behind your journey?
Well, I have three inspirations. One would be my mentor. His name is Bill McCarley, and he actually works in my team now, and he's the one who's developed the responsibility material to the extent that it's developed. And I still learn from him every time I'm with him. And we have something called mastery groups, which is where we get together and help each other find breakthroughs to responsibility where we know we're stuck. And I do a two-hour mastery group with him twice a month, and I'm still always learning. So he's an inspiration. He introduced me a long time ago to Dr. R. Buckminster Fuller, who's one of the world's geniuses, and you know, the inventor of the geodesic dome and so many other things. And he was kind of the, he's an amazing design scientist, and he was out to discover what he called the universe's design principles. And that's why he invented stuff, was he was playing with the universe's ideas. And one of them, the simple one, is he said the universe doesn't use squares to design structures. The universe uses triangles. And that whole experiment led to the geodesic dome, which is the structure that can withstand the most environmental changes and the worst weather conditions. So all the buildings in Antarctica are geodesic domes. So my most recent inspiration of the last 10 or 15 years is Dr. David R. Hawkins, PhD, so he's MD, PhD. And Dr. Hawkins is really who's given me a path to evolving my consciousness to greater and greater heights. And, you know, again, I believe that conscious leadership is where the world is going. And I believe that the responsibility practice is the fastest way to develop one's consciousness. And Hawkins has developed a 1,000-point linear scale of consciousness. And the book of his that I like so much, Power versus Force, the subtitle is The Hidden Determinants of Human Behavior. So if you want to understand why people do what they do, I highly recommend reading this book, because you know, so many of us stand around scratching our heads saying, why'd they do that? Right? Or this is perfectly rational. Why can't that politician see it and be rational? Or why can't that peer be rational? Well, this book will blow your mind around that.
The Hidden Determinants of Human Behavior. It sounds fascinating.
Well, what it essentially says is that, as you know, the thousand point scale of consciousness, right? People at lower levels of consciousness see the world differently than people at higher levels of consciousness, right? And everywhere in between, right? So as you change your inner world, your outer world changes. And as you develop in consciousness, your both your inner and outer world just get better and better and better.
For sure. I feel like we've talked about this question quite a bit, but during the interviews so far, when we've talked about things that go wrong, but how would you describe your relationship with failure?
Yeah, thank you. It's quite good. And the reason is that I try to operate with detachment, right? So I don't believe that I'm in charge of any results. I believe that I'm only in charge of the motions and processes and behaviors and actions that I put in place. And so if I do something and it ends up producing a result that's very different than what I wanted or experienced, I try and let it go as rapidly as possible. So I believe in a world where there are no ends, there's only means, right?
Wow.
And so for me, failure is not an end. It's just another experience of experimenting with something. It might have been a big experiment that didn't work out, and there's an opportunity for me to mine it for lessons. And, you know, roll up my sleeves and do it again, or go on vacation and and let it go for a while, right? So I'm sure you've talked about Winston Churchill's quote about failure, right? Success is the ability to go to failure from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I love hearing different thought processes around failure because, you know, one of the big things, we label it, and it's always cool when I can talk to someone who doesn't necessarily label it, or, you know, Carol Sanford, for example, just says, "I've never failed." It's a process of daily discovery, and I just love that. And I think that when we can embrace those things, we're going to continue to learn and really focus back in on, you know, that whole process that you just spoke about, means and ends. Just keep doing what we do things to the best of our ability every single day. And, you know, if we're going to label something, let's do the right thing as opposed to, you know, what others may perceive as maybe doing the wrong thing. So I really love hearing about that. Christopher, what about the vision? What is your vision and where do you want to take the responsibility process?
Good question. Thank you. So my vision for the responsibility process is that everybody in the world has an opportunity to view personal responsibility differently and has a how-to approach for taking charge of their life. Our current mission is focused on leadership in business and organizations. I would like it to be the number one leadership tool in the world, right? Instead of, you know, it used to be Myers-Briggs was kind of the number one leadership development tool, and you know, different tools come forward. So whether or not it becomes the number one leadership tool in the world, I think there's an opportunity for us to start to serve other groups besides leaders in business, right?
Yep.
Parents, teachers, preachers, kids, all sorts of opportunity out there to help people learn how powerful they are, and how they're, you know, what we teach is you're actually creating your own disappointment, and you're saying that it's out there is the reason instead of in here. And so that's,
wow,
that's where I'm going with this. I'm just going to, you know, I don't see myself doing anything different, in terms of career. I've already retired. So I retired 20 years ago. I define retirement as getting up every day and doing exactly what you want to do.
Yeah.
So I just decided to start getting up every day and doing what I want to do. And since I wasn't independently wealthy, one constraint was that it had to feed me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I've been able to do that. So yeah, that's it.
That's
just keep
so
going
cool.
forward, seeing who I can collaborate with. To get the responsibility material in front of more people in more places.
Sounds ideal. Christopher, how can people connect with you?
Responsibility.com is the home of the Responsibility Company. And in fact, on the homepage, there's a button to take the Responsibility Scorecard self-assessment. I highly recommend that you do that. And you can reach me and any of us through our website. There's lots of places that tell you to send a note to hello@responsibility.com.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you. And that responsibility button is one that I'll be pressing to see. I love learning new processes. I love learning new concepts. And it sounds that there's so much it just resonates with me really, really deeply. So, Christopher, thank you so much for your time today, and thank you so much for investing in today's leaders.
Coach Carl, thank you for your podcast. Thank you for your interest. Thank you for your hospitality and wonderful questions.
If you're looking to build better leadership skills, check out the Today's Leader website at todaysleader.com.au. We really are driving a leadership revolution to build tomorrow's best leaders today. Today's Leader is a collective, the mindset to make a difference, the ability to create an impact. Think and Grow Business hosts our Today's Leader Mastermind. Think and Grow Business, where we focus on personal, professional, and business growth. Book your free 30-minute discovery call right from the homepage at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au. Don't forget, wherever you are standing stronger, braver, and wiser. Don't forget the golden rule. Don't be an arsehole. I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.